From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Groz.
And welcome to the program. We are broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, just blocks away from our state capitol. And we are so excited and grateful to be able to start the show today by talking about the terrific news we got last week that we've been working towards all year long. The state budget bill passed with the pro-life Title X provision that ends taxpayer subsidies of abortion clinics intact. This pro-life provision in the state budget turned into a huge fight. It caused multiple filibusters, and senators were attempting to sink the entire state budget over their commitment to taxpayer funding of abortion. But due to the resolve of our governor and a lot of pro-life senators who championed this, we can now finally say that your tax dollars will not be used to support abortion clinics in Nebraska. This is something that we haven't been able to accomplish here before in our state, and it came last week on a final vote on the state budget bill of 38-6. It was an incredibly hard-fought victory, but this is great news for pro-life Nebraskans. This is a common-sense policy solution to ensure that taxpayer dollars through the Title X grant program are not subsidizing abortion clinics. And this provision that passed in the budget that makes adjustment to that Title X program protects the valuable services that people receive through Title X by requiring additional separation requirements from the abortion industry. This provides greater accountability, it protects the integrity of the program, and it does nothing to change or reduce the amount of funds available for Title X services. All current recipients can choose to follow these regulations and separation requirements and remain eligible. And despite how the mainstream media outlets like to talk about this issue, this is a popular policy. Americans, and especially Nebraskans, generally agree that taxpayer money should not be used to support or subsidize abortion clinics. And there are a lot of misconceptions out there about what this policy actually is, what it does, and why it's an important victory for our state. And there's no one better to talk about this and give us the inside scoop of what took place and how we were finally able to get this done than State Senator Mike Hilgers of Lincoln. I'm pleased to be joined by Senator Hilgers, who has been a champion for families and family values in the state legislature. Senator Hilgers, it is great to have you on the program today.
Hey, great to be on. Thanks for having me, Nate.
Senator Hilgers, I know you were really heavily involved in the negotiations on Title X and helping push this across, which so many Nebraskans are appreciative of and have been asking the legislature to do for years. Why is this so important, and why was it so important for you to help make sure that this got done this session?
Well, it was critical because without this language, taxpayer dollars could be being used to both directly and indirectly subsidize abortion here in Nebraska, which not just me and a majority of my colleagues, but I think near a supermajority of Nebraskans believe should not happen. So without this language, Nate, the problem was twofold. One is that there were abortions being funded by Title X dollars, which are taxpayer dollars funded through the federal government, contrary to federal law. We know this because of a 2015-2016 audit done in the state of Nebraska that found Planned Parenthood had used taxpayer dollars to provide for abortion services. But secondly, providing taxpayer dollars to an abortion provider, even if it's not for an abortion service, helps subsidize that provider and helps subsidize their ability to provide abortion. With this language, what we were able to do is ensure that taxpayer dollars that are taken from you, me, and others who find abortion deeply and morally objectionable are not used to help support the abortion industry.
I think you're exactly right. And so we know that this sort of hit a snag on second round voting where senators were willing to tank the entire budget over this language. And the way it's been presented, I think, in the media and some papers is that there was a compromise that was reached in order to get this through. But when I look at it, really, I don't know if I would call it a compromise as much as a clarification. What's your take on the change there that helped get this through the last round of voting?
No, and that's a great question, Nate. So this area, Title 10, is as you know, is incredibly complex. There's a layer of federal regulation, federal statutes, state statutes, and there's a little bit of a mix, and it can create some uncertainty. So it's not always easy to ask the same question and get the same answer. And so here, there was because we're dealing with Title 10 funding. There was concern by opponents that the way that the language was originally drafted, it would not just make it so that abortion providers would not receive taxpayer dollars, but also could put Title 10, other Title 10 that were frequently called federally qualified health clinics, at risk of not receiving Title 10 funds, even if they don't provide abortions. So the reason why I agree with your characterization is that it wasn't, in a sense, a compromise, is only because, in my view, the language as originally proposed did not do what the opponent suggested or believed that it did. In other words, I believe the original language would not have put that Title 10 funding at risk. That being said, a number of my colleagues, in good faith, had a disagreement with that interpretation and believed contrary to that. And so when we were dealing with a couple million dollars of Title 10 funding that we all agreed were important, we worked together to try to find some language that would give them some comfort that in the process of ensuring that Title 10 funds didn't go to support abortion, we didn't also create a situation in which other non-abortion providers would lose that funding as well.
Senator, what was it like inside the legislature working on those negotiations? We know this is such a contentious issue, and you've got passionate people on both sides, and you were right in the middle of this. What was that like for you trying to reach some agreement or bring some of your colleagues on board or further educate them to see what this policy actually does?
You know, Nate, I got to tell you, it was an honor to be down here, and part of that is because I think what I saw was the legislative process at its best. And what I mean by that is you were absolutely right. This is a very contentious issue. There are a few issues that create more of an emotional divide than abortion. And oftentimes what that leads to are people not listening to each other. And if you can't listen to each other, you can't communicate, you can't even begin to work towards common goals. What happened during our compromise our negotiations was the opposite. We spent hours and hours and hours together. So it was myself, Senator Watermeyer, and several colleagues of ours who were opposed to even the original version of the language. And we worked together. Now, it wasn't easy, but it required a lot of listening and a lot of communicating and doing it in a way that where we didn't go to our separate corners and sort of cross our arms and say, well, I'm not going to listen to you because you're not listening to me, or the like, or get caught up in that sort of emotion of the moment. I mean, it was very difficult. It was very hard. But part of that was because of the complicating nature of the federal regulations. Part of it was just as we try to sort through different assumptions and premises that we all had, and to be able to kind of come to some common understanding and common goal. So it was very long. It was very difficult. It was hard work, but it was a process from which I took a lot, which is that we can sit down with people with whom we disagree on these types of fundamental issues, and maybe we're not always going to walk out and say we all agree now, but where we can identify common goals and work together to pursue those goals, I think that we can make a lot of progress. And I think that's what happened. I don't think it was a compromise in the true sense of the word, where something significant was given up, but it was a clarification to ensure that their concerns were heard, and we did hear them, and we worked to ensure that their concerns were addressed. And so I think in that sense it was a great legislative process.
Well, I really appreciate that clarification, Senator, and I wanted to ask you, so that this Title 10 provision in the budget, it got through first round on the floor, and then on second round, pro-choice senators and those who wanted to keep funding abortion clinics with taxpayer dollars got enough people, enough senators to vote no on the entire budget that it stalled, and it had to keep coming back. Were you surprised that there were, you know, that many of your colleagues who were willing to tank not just this provision, but the entire state budget bill over this provision?
Well, I would say that I think at the end of the day, the budget would have passed. It's surprising to see votes that the votes are not there for cloture, which would have ceased debate, as you know, which would have moved the budget to the third round. It's surprising in the sense that historically, I don't know if that's ever happened. So from that perspective, yes. At the end of the day, and I'm speculating a little bit because we never got there, thankfully, I think a number of my colleagues would have ultimately come around to vote for the budget anyway. Part of that's based on some of the comments on the floor that were made on the mic and then off the mic as well. So, you know, I think it was disappointing to see that we got hung up at all. But at the end of the day, you know, we didn't get to a point. I think we all wanted to avoid a situation in which the budget bill was not getting passed and was getting defeated by a filibuster, because what that creates a significant, in my view, very negative precedent down the road. The budget is the number one issue that we have. So our number one responsibility that we have to discharge. And if we're not getting that because we disagree on a particular issue, I think that's a very bad precedent for the future. Now, thankfully, that didn't come to pass. We were able to work through this clarification language and come together, and we were able to get it done. I think we probably would have anyway, but I'm glad we didn't have to find out.
Well, Senator, you know, I think it would have been very easy for you and a lot of other pro-life senators at that point to sort of back down or say, hey, look, you know, we have to get the budget through. We have to pass a budget. So we'll come back and try again next year or put it in a separate bill. How and why were you and a lot of other pro-life senators able to stand so firmly on this issue and ensure that this pro-life victory came to fruition?
Well, I think I give a tremendous amount of credit to my colleagues who stood firm. That, I think, more than anything, you know, really was what won the day. You can't go into – if you go into a negotiation of any kind and you have no support, or if you have no backup, or if you know that, you know, all you have is one vote but the rest of your colleagues on your side might go a different way no matter what you do, that puts you in pretty weak position to get anything done. All my colleagues who voted for this language originally, they were very firm in their conviction, and they knew what was at stake. I mean, they knew that the language as it was written, and with the clarification language and the amendment that we came up with, they were very comfortable with what it did, which is protecting Title X funding, but ensuring that taxpayer dollars didn't go to subsidize abortion. And so that was, I think, when people are firm in their convictions and they understand what it is that we're trying to do and why we're trying to do it, and they also are comfortable understanding that the downside opposition is not going to come to fruition in the way that maybe opponents would have suggested, you know, for instance, Title X funding going away. They felt very good about it. And so we could not have gotten to where we got without the firm conviction of a majority of the colleagues in the body.
Senator Hilders, there's been a lot of what I would say is misinformation put out recently about this pro-life Title X provision and its impact. And I wanted to ask you, is this about one specific provider, or does this apply generally across the board to anyone who wants to receive Title X funds?
It is not. We are not targeting. We did not target. We would not target one particular provider at all. The language is drafted to apply to any entity that wants to apply for Title X funds and provides abortion services, or wants to refer for abortion services. There aren't maybe a number of entities who provide abortion services out there in Nebraska. There certainly are a number of entities that may have referred for abortion before. And between those two groups, it's not just one particular provider. And so, no, we did not and would not just target one particular provider.
And Senator, there's also been some editorials recently that have sort of put a lot of the blame on the budget stalling for a while on the governor, and that he shouldn't have been pushing for this policy. But the Appropriations Committee in the legislature had a hearing on this language. There were multiple rounds of voting. Isn't it fair to say that, you know, although this started as a recommendation from the governor, it was really the legislature that owned this and decided it did belong in the budget?
There's no doubt about that. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And I'll say first, this is not the only time we put a provision in our state budget that restricts the use of taxpayer funds to support abortion. In fact, every year since, I believe, 1999, if not a little earlier, we've had a provision in the budget for other pieces of taxpayer funding to prohibit those dollars from going towards abortion, including our budget that we signed last year. So the idea that this is not at home in a budget, I think, doesn't square with the historical facts. It was at the suggestion of the governor, as all initial appropriation bills are, right? The governor provides the initial budget, but we have a process within the legislature, and it's a process that we followed. As you mentioned, the Appropriations Committee worked together. They had a hearing on this particular provision. There were multiple attempts to strip out this provision of the appropriations bill or modify it. Those attempts were not successful. It went to the floor. The legislature went through three rounds of debate. And when we had these negotiations, who was in the room were only senators. This was the legislative branch of government working together very closely to try to come up with some compromise language that would be able to get us over through the filibuster and get the budget passed. The governor wasn't in the room. The governor's team wasn't in the room. Did the governor have a voice throughout? Of course. I mean, the governor's one introduced the language, and it was also one an entire branch of government, and will at the end of the day potentially veto the budget or not veto the budget. So, of course, the governor is going to have a voice. But this was a legislative process throughout, and it reached a legislative conclusion.
That clarification is so important. I think it's obvious, and a lot of people get that, but that's helpful to hear directly from a state senator. And Senator Hildreth, I wanted to ask, what are you going to take away from this? This has really turned into sort of the big debate of the year, and what should we all learn from this issue? And now that we've gotten it across the finish line and we're able to claim really one of the most significant pro-life victories in years.
Well, a couple things I would say, Nate, and I think anytime we have a victory, I think these two of these things are going to be there. One is standing firm in our convictions. And to do that, you have to understand what it is that you're trying to accomplish, why it is so important. If you don't know those two things, it's a lot easier to not stand firm. So we stood firm here, and if you can't stand firm, then you'll get blown over. So that was incredibly important. But I also think, number two, that, and you watched the debate, Nate, I know you were there. The debate was, this is an emotional issue, as many of these issues are. And there were certainly moments, I think, in the debate where the emotion was present. You could feel it. But I think the approach that many of us took, and frankly, and I include on all sides, including specifically the senators that I worked with as we worked through this language, was in the main an attempt to understand, listen, and try to identify common goals and identify real issues. Because there are issues of principle with which we will maybe always disagree. But there are other issues that that might appear as if they are disagreements because we are communicating in a way that we're not being understood, or we're not listening to the other side and understanding exactly what their concerns are. And so I think I think instrumental piece of its success was that it was fact-based, that it was thoughtful, that it was winsome, that it was that we listened, we engaged. This was not a process, in my view, in which it was just, you know, we're not going to listen, and this is what's important, and we don't really care about your concerns or how you articulate them. I think, to the contrary, every concern that was raised was taken very seriously. Some we disagreed with, maybe many we disagreed with, but I think I think we can learn a lot from both those two things. We're standing firm on our convictions, but our approach to debate, I think, is nearly as critical to help winning these debates, because I think by approaching it that way, there are people who can be won over. There's some people who never will agree on issues, but there are people who can be won over if there's some of their other concerns or can be addressed, or if they feel like they're being heard and their concerns are being listened to. So those are probably two. There are others, I'm sure, but those are two of my biggest takeaways.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth in there, and I think people will be really encouraged to hear those sentiments and what you learned and took away from this. My last question for you, Senator Hildreth, the state legislature is in the closing days now, just a few working days left. What are your overall thoughts about this year? It seemed it was a very contentious session at times. We got a lot of good things done, some maybe things we would have liked to have seen happen that didn't. What will you remember about this year's session?
Well, that's a great question. It seems like it's gone over in a blink. It's been one of those, the days seem very long, but the weeks have gone by pretty quickly. You know, this is my first short session, Nate, and so coming into it, you don't have the same expectations maybe as a long session because there are just not as many bills that are going to be heard. Pretty clearly after week two or three, it seemed as if this was going to be a year in which only really priority bills were going to be heard. And so there wasn't really an opportunity to expand the number of bills that could be passed into law beyond priority bills. So you had to set your expectations early on that there are only going to be a few key things to get done. I think at the top of that list would be certainly the budget. Getting the budget adjustments passed was job number one, and probably, you know, job number two or 1B would be including the Title 10 language. I think those are very significant accomplishments for this particular session. I don't, you know, the tenor of this, I think if you were to take 49 people, and I don't care what environment, I don't care if it's in the legislature, I don't care what their political ideologies are, I don't care what the issues are, and you put them together and put them in a place in which they have to challenge each other and might be adversarial or if they have to work together, I think you're going to have some combustion to some degree. I mean, it's just natural in that process. And so I always, you know, I'm a trained attorney in my private life, and I am used to having arguments without having it be personal. And so what I saw was a lot of heated debates this year, but you know, mostly around issues. Sometimes you can't help when it flares up in other ways. But I don't take away from this session, or frankly last session, this adversarial such that it's where it's degrading personal relationships. So I don't feel that here. I feel like certainly I do, and I think many of my colleagues, we have very good working relationships down here in the Capitol, even if some issues get tense and we battle, and we battle hard. So I think from an accomplishment perspective, the budget was probably job number one, and we got it done. And really starting to set the stage for next year, because I think next year is going to be – we're going to have a new round of elections. We're going to have some new senators, some new colleagues. We'll have some senators leave. But with that new long session, I think everyone's kind of looking to that next horizon, saying, okay, we've got a long interim. Let's start pulling – getting our ducks together in a row, and let's start pulling together what we want to get accomplished next year. So it was a good session overall, but I think – you have to have a different expectation level than a long session when you're dealing with a short session.
Senator Mike Hilgers of Lincoln. Senator, I can't thank you enough for coming on the program today and for your insight. And on behalf of Nebraska Family Alliance, we just, again, want to applaud you and thank you for all of your work on Title 10 and helping secure this pro-life victory, and for standing firm for your convictions and serving in the Nebraska legislature.
Nate, thanks so much for having me. It was an honor to be down here, and I was happy to play a small role.
Thank you again to Senator Hilgers. And if you would like to send a thank you to the governor or any of the pro-life senators who stood strong on this issue and voted for the pro-life Title 10 provision, you can visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org right on the homepage. We've got it all set up. You can find out who your state senator is, see who supported this Title 10 provision, and send off a quick email to state senators or the governor thanking them for all their work to secure a major pro-life victory and standing firm for our values. And speaking of standing firm for values, on a separate issue that came into the news quite a bit this past week, female state senators are certainly standing up for themselves and their values in the legislature after coming under attack from strip clubs for their efforts to regulate bring-your-own-beer strip clubs that currently are not licensed or regulated in any fashion, and there are growing signs of sexual exploitation and human trafficking that they are talking about and starting to take seriously. This effort is being led by Senator Teresa Thibodeau of Omaha, who we had on earlier this session. She is working, rightfully so, to bring these clubs under the control of the Liquor Control Commission to make sure they play by the same rules as everybody else, and to make sure that not only liquor laws are being followed, but that also other criminal activity and some of the things that we're growing concerned about, like sexual exploitation and human trafficking, aren't taking place, because right now these clubs can keep law enforcement out. No one really knows what's going on for sure. And so because Senator Thibodeau is trying to close this loophole that allows bottle clubs to get away with doing these things that nobody else can, these clubs have started to bully some of these senators, including a club in Waverly that put derogatory language up on their sign for everyone to see, directed at Senator Thibodeau, and also threatened Senator Pansy-Brooks of Lincoln that they would be seeing her in court. So these senators, along with Senator Geist of Lincoln and 19 of their colleagues, held a press conference this past week to address this, to say that they are not backing down. They're going to keep working to find a way to finally close this loophole. And with only a few days left in this year's session, there's little remaining time for this to happen. But keep an eye on this. The session's not over yet. They're going to keep fighting for it. We're still advocating for it. And I'll have an update for you on that next week. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for Nebraska Family Alliance, hoping you'll join us next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.